Clio is invented. What Clio describes is not. It is happening across east of England right now. This is their story. Healthcare training in Colchester has stalled not because qualified candidates cannot be found, but because Treasury spending limits treat nursing education as a cost to be rationed rather than the pathway that connects willing people to understaffed wards.
My nan used to say nurses were angels in uniform. I was 8 when she died, and I still remember how gentle the night staff were during those final weeks. They had time to sit with her, to explain what was happening, to make sure she wasn't scared. I knew then that was what I wanted to do. Growing up on Greenstead Estate, you learn early that some dreams require planning. My parents both worked full-time, but money was always tight. Mum was a teaching assistant at the local primary. Dad worked shifts at the Amazon warehouse. They supported my ambition, but couldn't fund it. So I planned. A-levels at Colchester Sixth Form, weekends at Meadowbank Care Home to build experience, then 3 years as a healthcare assistant at Colchester Hospital while I saved every penny for university. Those 3 years taught me more than any textbook could. I watched experienced nurses manage complex cases with skill I envied. I also watched them burn out from chronic understaffing. Some mornings we had 2 qualified nurses covering a 30-bed ward. I'd see the same nurses working double shifts week after week, too exhausted to give the care they wanted to give. Patients waited longer for pain relief. Families got shorter updates. The compassion was still there, but the system was breaking under pressure. In 2019, I finally felt ready. Essex University accepted my nursing application. I'd saved nearly enough for the first year. Then reality hit. Living costs, textbooks, travel to placements. My parents offered to help, but they'd already done enough. I deferred, worked another year, watched the staffing crisis get worse. I reapplied in 2020, got my place again, started planning my notice period at the hospital. Then 3 weeks before term started, Essex University called. Health Education England had announced emergency caps on nursing training places due to Treasury spending limits. My funded place was withdrawn. They were sorry. Their hands were tied. I thought it was a temporary setback. COVID had disrupted everything. I'd try again next year, but 2021 brought the same result. Place offered, then withdrawn when the national funding allocation came through. This time I asked more questions. Essex had capacity for more students. Clinical placements were available. The demand from hospitals was obvious to anyone working in them. So what exactly was the problem? There is no funding, the admissions coordinator explained. We can only train the number Health Education England can afford to support. It sounded reasonable. Everything costs money. Governments have budgets. I accepted it initially. I tried a different route. Nursing associates train for 2 years instead of 3, working in trusts while they study. Surely that would be more affordable. NHS England's local team was encouraging when I called. They liked my experience, my commitment. Then they checked their systems. We cannot afford to run that programme this year, the coordinator told me. The budget has been cut. That phrase again, I was starting to hear it everywhere. Cut training budgets, cut staffing budgets, cut everything except the need for more nurses. I contacted the East of England Deanery directly, thinking maybe local decision makers would understand the urgency better than national bureaucrats. The response was polite but firm. Their hands were tied by national funding decisions. Treasury had set the envelope. Health Education England had allocated the places. Local areas could not exceed their quotas. Frustrated, I drove to Essex University's nursing department. I wanted to see this shortage for myself. What I found didn't match what I'd been told. The lecture halls were empty. The clinical simulation labs with their high-tech patient mannequins and monitoring equipment sat gathering dust. A technician I knew from my placement days explained they'd been instructed to keep everything maintained and ready, despite having no students to teach. We could be training twice as many, she said, gesturing at the unused spaces. The equipment's here, the staff are here, the hospitals are crying out for nurses. But the funding envelope won't stretch. I walked through those empty labs, thinking about Monica from Ipswich, who'd faced identical blocks when we'd met at a healthcare recruitment fair, thinking about the nurses at Colchester Hospital working those impossible shifts, thinking about patients waiting longer than they should for basic care. The people existed, the training facilities existed, the desperate need existed, but somewhere in Westminster, someone had decided there wasn't enough money to connect them. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins was telling me, It couldn't find enough of them to train people who were standing right there, ready to work. It wasn't about whether the teaching capacity existed. It did. It wasn't about whether people wanted to train. We did. It wasn't about whether the NHS needed more nurses. It obviously did. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available, that they were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. A government that issues its own currency doesn't hunt through its pockets for loose change before funding nurse training. It makes a political decision about how many pounds to spend into the NHS, then presents that decision as though mathematics forced their hand. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and people who needed it. I'm still here, still watching, still working as a healthcare assistant while those simulation labs sit empty. What I understand now is that my story isn't unique. It's happening in every constituency where people and needs exist, side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never bare. Someone just decided not to open it.
What Clio experienced has a name: fake experts. This technique relies on citing economists or commentators who treat the household budget analogy as self-evident truth, as though repeating it makes it true. The tobacco industry perfected this approach in the 1960s, funding researchers who questioned links between smoking and cancer, then citing their own funded studies as independent expertise. The goal wasn't to prove tobacco was safe, but to create enough doubt that the public would accept inaction. In Clio's case, every time officials cited Treasury spending limits or budget constraints, they referenced unnamed economists who supposedly proved that government spending must be rationed like household income. Economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation, they claimed. Which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say without naming them is an appeal to unnamed authority. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources. People, skills, materials, time. At Essex University, those resources were sitting idle. Empty lecture halls, unused simulation equipment, qualified instructors with no students to teach. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Colchester ranks 287 out of 543 English constituencies on the Deprivation Index, English Indices of Deprivation 2025 MHCLG. The constituency has 4,151 registered charities, Charity Commission Register, England and Wales. Local organisations received £42.2 million in grants, 360 giving grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.